Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we talk about the Doom Patrol, and some weeks we have a new Doom Patrol, like this one. Exciting.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is run by our fellow Doom bro Doug Zavisha, and has lots of corresponding thoughts and images from the issues that we cover, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yeah, and I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. And if you want to talk to the Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred. Hi, Wilfred.
Hello, humans.
He's at WFD Pod. And we are also sponsored by Comicosity, the website on the internet thing, computer.
Yes. Welcome to 2018, Paul. Yes, this week on Comicosity, something that grabbed my attention is a new interview that Aaron Long has put up there under their hashtag Make Comics series of articles. And he interviewed Joshua Williamson, who's written a few books like Nailbiter and Ghosted for Image. He's worked on Justice League vs. Suicide Squad. He's a current Flash writer, and he'll be doing some work in the upcoming DC Nation comic, which is like that new sampler for like 25 cents American.
Oh, out next weekend, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's also going to be doing some writing on the big Justice League No Justice event that's coming up. So he's got a lot on his plate. And it was really interesting to see how he balances his, you know, writing work and his family life, because apparently they have a very young daughter. So he was sort of saying, you know, he gets up and works from like, I think it's 7 a.m. to sort of 6:30 at night, and then he's out of his office and back with the family. But he appears to be very strict with his work ethic. He has no social media on his computer or on his phone. He's just work, work, work. So I found that a really interesting read, actually. So you check that out on comicosity.com, along with all their other comic book love stuff. Excellent site.
Awesome.
Anyway, Paul, how's your week in comics and such been?
Comics, yes. I've been reading some comics. I read Domino from Marvel, which was excellent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. David Bowdy in art and Gail Simone writing. And a very, very good comic. I mean, I find Gail Simone, sometimes she's on and sometimes she's not. Mm-hmm. Like Batgirl,
right.
As an example of not. But golly, Domino looks like a lot of fun. It was a great first issue, and probably the most fun I've had with Gail Simone writing since probably Secret Six.
Wow.
The pre-New 52 Secret Six, I'll just quantify that.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of such, I went to the movies. I may have seen a little film called Avengers Infinity War and may have had my mind blown a little bit.
A little bit? Just a little, little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Mike?
I too have seen that small
art house film.
I think it was, some sort of kickstarted art house film with a bunch of nobodies in it. But, you know, good luck to them all. No, obviously, Avengers Infinity War, massive film. Massive, massive. And like you, my mind was also blown. Without giving anything away, I was very, 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 very happy with the post-credit scene.
Yes. Yeah, that was a fun one. That's a good one.
It was very good.
Yeah. Yeah. So after that, I guess there's just going to be a reboot and, they'll start again.
Yeah. Well, it'll be Secret Wars for sure. And, you know, that's how they'll bring the Fantastic Four in, you know?
Ah, I thought they're going to do Secret Wars 2 first. But anyway.
Who knows? Now, the recent Secret Wars, the one that ended the Marvel Universe, which stopped me from reading Marvel ever again.
Oh, that Secret Wars.
Yeah.
Secret Wars 3, yes.
Yes. The Hickman Secret Wars, yes.
Ah, right, yes.
Anyway, speaking of comic book shenanigans, I also went to Supernova on the Gold Coast.
Yes, a convention.
A pop culture convention. Lots of cosplay, lots of TV stars there, like Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum, I think it is, who played Lex, both from Smallville. And Rosenbaum also did the voice of the Flash.
Yeah.
Some of the animated stuff as well.
Yeah.
My partner Kylie got to have her photo taken with Peter Capaldi and Pearl Mackey.
Oh, were they there?
They were there, Doctor Who and Bill. I was also meant to be in that photo, but unfortunately, I was still looking for a car park at the time.
Oh, golly.
So, about a 90-minute drive from our house to the Gold Coast and then like another hour to find a car park. So
that sounds like fun.
That is one word starting with F that I use to describe the situation. So, luckily, our eldest boy came along for the trip. So, he got to have the photo with Capaldi and Pearl. So, but then we also went and got Pearl to sign the photo later on. So, I got to say hello to her and meet her briefly afterwards. She said I was very gallant
for
giving up my time to find a car park. So
it's always Photoshop, Mike.
Well, yeah, Connor said that as well, but I was like, yeah, not the same. I also got to meet Mike Grell, noted warlord artist. I got a print of Batman from him, which I loved, and he signed it for me. I made a bit of a dick of myself in that, see, sometimes I think people from overseas don't quite understand my accent. So I will oftentimes spell my name out if they're writing something for me. And so when they asked for my name, I spelled out Mike. And Mike Grell gave me a slightly odd look and kind of had a bit of a chuckle and said, oh, well, you know, it's not like I would have trouble spelling that. And I kind of chuckled politely, but it didn't sink in until like an hour or so later on the way home. I was like, that's because his name is... right. It was a long day.
Soon starring in a sitcom called The Two Mikes.
Yes, yes. And also got to briefly meet Arthur Adams and got him to sign my long shot trade paperback from back in the 80s of Marveldom. It was one of my favourite stories from back in then. I used to have the single issues as a kid. I think I read them to death and lost them somewhere amongst many house moves, but I've held onto the trade for many years, and I knew he was going to be there. Finally, I got him to sign it. So, and I got to buy some locally made comics by a friend and avowed fan of the show, Brad Daniels. Another friend in real life. Yes, I do have those. And he writes some independent comic stuff, so... I picked up his he does sort of anthology things, and he also takes old school comics from like the 40s and 50s and writes new stories over the top of them in the word balloons and stuff. And some of them are very funny and very strange. So one of his anthologies is called Stuff That Never Happened, all made up stories. And another one is Tales Too Stupid to Tell.
Yeah,
and that's the one where
he's rewritten retro comics.
Yes, and yet they tell them. He also did a series called Groovy Gravy, which was like an anthology series he's been doing for 20-something years, locally made stuff. So it was cool to catch up with Brad and get his books as well. So all in all, an interesting day at Supernova Gold Coast, other than the travel and the car park.
Well done, Mike.
I much rather would have gone and seen Infinity War again, but, you know, there's still plenty of time for that.
Wouldn't have bumped into Mike Grell at that movie.
Probably not. If I did, he'd probably point and laugh. So, and yes, Darren and Ruth, I did mention to Mike that we knew each other, and he and his partner, who I believe is his wife, they were very excited that we knew each other. So there you go. Keeping the podcast family. Deary me. Anyway, enough about all of that. How about we go and have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way?
Sure.
Yay.
Okay. say, if we look down on Derringer Way, there is actually word from the Derringer Way camp, finally. Ooh. Finally, after many, many weeks of silence. I don't think there's been any official word from Gerard since Milk Wars. But now, something was posted, and he said, "I barely know what to say. This 11-issue arc of Doom Patrol has been quite the journey. Many notebooks were filled with ideas, hair was pulled, foreheads collided with desks, and the team spent many nights typing, drawing, colouring, inking, editing. And yes, issue 11 was supposed to go right into Milk Wars, but Milk Wars needed to come out on time, and we were behind, so this is a little late." A little late? But no less fun. "And there are lots of answers here. We knew that people could enjoy Milk Wars without reading this issue, but here you now have it. Really curious to see what people think about this one, and has some of my favourite lines and art in this issue. For the full experience, read Arc 1 and 2 of Doom Patrol, then read Milk Wars, and then we'll be back with a very special issue of Doom 12 to close up the whole thing and give you more of the story and what the Reynolds family are up to. Then we'll be back with a brand new vibe with issue 13, which we are really excited about. I'll be posting about our two other Young Animal releases tomorrow, Bug and Mother Panic, which are also out today. This post is a bit long, so I don't think I'll be able to fit all the credits here, but rest assured, the credits are all in the book, and everyone really knocked it out of the park. Thank you for your undying support and patience." I feel like he's been listening to the show.
A little late, kind of like how General Immortus is a little bit old. And a little bit of an advanced age. I'm sorry, it was due in November.
Yeah.
It's now May. Well, end of April, start of May. Close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But hey, well, look, I mean, he said
that... Puts to bed the rumour that it's cancelled.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're getting at least two more issues, so who knows?
Yeah. He said they're starting something new, a brand new vibe with 13. So that implies that there will be Doom Patrol beyond 13 as well. Yes. But mate, look, it's here. It's finally here.
As you said last time on the show, we both kind of had feelings that the change might be on the way and 13 might be the bridge between... you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a Volume 7 on the way with someone else at the wheel.
Or it could be Issue 13 is the start of a new writer, perhaps. We'll have to watch and see.
The Volume 6, 13 could be like the Volume 2, 18.
Yeah. Or 64.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not unprecedented to hand over the reins of the writing in a volume. But yeah. Anyway. Well, we'll talk more about this as we get into the issue. Other Doom Patrol stuff, it's not really related to Derrington Way, but it's Monsieur Mallor and the Brain Fest in DC Comics at the moment.
Oh, yes.
Popping up everywhere. So the Titans book and the other Teen Titans book, is it? Is there a Teen Titans book at the moment? There's another Titans book, isn't there?
Let's say yes. I don't know.
It's called Teen Justice. Or something.
Young Teen Justice Kids.
Young Teen Justice Sidekick Kids. Anyway, they've been in more than one book, and they are the big bads in the current arc of the Titans series, which it culminated in the final clash with them in the annual that came out a couple of weeks ago. So that's exciting. Though I'm a bit disappointed the Brain is so evil. I'm used to him being, sort of somewhat, focused on love.
Right.
But in this, he's more focused on destroying the world or, taking everyone out and things like that. But
yeah, the brief bits that I saw sort of had Mallor as being the lovey-dovey one.
Yeah, Mallor was the voice of reason and romance. It's a bit like, the Brain is ascending to a higher place that puts him beyond concerns, perhaps. Right. But anyway, yeah, it's good to see them getting an outing. They've really, not dropped in appearances in the last few years. They've been slow and steady popping up everywhere. Nice. Anyway, I'm hearing some ticking. Mike, can you explain that?
That can only be the Doom Clock.
Only?
Yes. Nothing else. Although you might need your hearing checked. If it's still going after the show.
All right.
Yeah. But we'll sort that out later.
Okay.
And so as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's only been 1 week since we last saw the Doom Patrol in a comic. And that was Doom Patrol Volume 6, Issue 11. A lead into the now concluded Milk Wars.
Yay.
Oops. Only a little bit late. But we will be discussing this issue in this episode, so I won't go into any more details. Issue 12 is due at this stage. Who knows when?
It's off the schedule.
Yeah. We've got no effing idea. Unless Paul, in the usual fashion, has just found something online in the last minute.
No, the future is a mystery.
It is?
It's like Terminator when, you know, she's... Terminator 2, where, you know, we make our own future at this point.
Right. Okay. Sure.
Perhaps. Perhaps it's like that. Maybe it's not.
Maybe. Maybe we can do, like, Doctor Strange and, you know... Oh, no, I shouldn't say that because it might be a spoiler for people that haven't seen... Never mind. Anyway, this week, in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for $1.50 American on May 5th of 1992 with a cover date of June of that year, was issue 56 of Doom Patrol Volume 2. Grant Morrison, Richard Case, Stan Wach, Johnny Workman Jr. and Daniel Vozzo gave us the issue titled Down in the Well, in which Crazy Jane went on a rampage in a church in Metropolis before she took a really healthy trip back to her family farm where she lived as a child. That was a good choice. And then Robot Man discovered that Tempest, Josh Clay, could not dodge bullets, and Niles called to the chief, apparently did not need a wheelchair after all.
Oops.
Mm.
That was a light and breezy issue, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so much fun. Yeah. Anyway, we covered this issue and issue 57 back in episode 82 from January of 2017. So you can go and check that out for more details. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Sweet.
Coming soon from Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake, a Batman Universe podcast network production. It's the radio drama you've demanded. Well, it's the one Rob produced and made into a four-part weekly radio drama. From the pages of Detective Comics comes A Lonely Place of Living. Where in the world is Tim Drake? Red Robin faces a crucial decision: escape the most devious prison ever devised, or find himself abandoned beyond time and space for all eternity. Not really a choice, right? But when he finds out just who is locked in there with him, Tim's world will change in ways he never imagined. In the biggest undertaking Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake has ever attempted, ELTD Theater is in full swing, with over 20 voice actors from a variety of popular podcasts lending their talents to make the comics come alive. Featuring Justin Kowalski as Batman.
And all the time he's been out there, lost and trapped, knowing that at the end of the day, his mentor was one of the world's greatest detectives on the planet. He knew I was coming. I wasn't! And I can't stop until I bring him home.
Andrew Leland as Alfred.
Master Bruce, you need to sleep even just a few hours. I'm getting ready to pull out one of Dr. Crane's more narcotic gases from the laboratory if you continue like this.
Andy Giganova as Nightwing.
Robin? You want me to go back to being Robin? I can't. Just as I can't go back to being 13 again. But you're right. Batman needs me. Maybe instead of arguing with him, I should try and help him.
Olivia Mullins as Batwoman.
Unconscious the next roof over. We could turn him over to Argus. I know they'll want someone to answer for his crimes.
Stella Bowman as Spoiler.
Hey, Dad. How's your night going? Still dead? Yeah, thought so.
The irredeemable Shag as Brother Eye.
Brother Eye is now online.
Michael Bailey as Mr. Oz.
Your mentor. He recently learned that you were alive, that you were trapped. But search as he might, he cannot find you. He hasn't slept in 5 nights, save for moments that he nods off in the chair. It consumes him.
Rob Myers as Red Robin.
I thought I would impress him. the way that I pieced it all together, and God, I wanted to impress him. I'd only met him once, just as a boy. I was terrified of the circus, but he calmed me down, and he told me that he would be performing just for me.
And many, many more. The first episode hits the first Wednesday in May, so prepare your ears for the story that changes everything for Tim Drake.
Hold on tight, Tim. As tight as you can to every moment, because this will all be over sooner than you can imagine.
And now it's time for Doom's Planning, the guts of the show that everybody loves. And this week, we are finally getting back to Volume 6 of Doom Patrol, Issue 11, the final issue before Milk Wars launched. So, Paul, tell us all about Issue 11, please.
Issue 11, it came out on April 25th, which is about a week ago. It was written by Gerard Way. It had art by Nick Darrington with pencils by inks by Tom Fowler. Tamara Bonvillain did the colours and Todd Klein did the funky letters. And it was edited by Jamie S. Rich and Molly Mahan. And there was an alternate cover, which has, well, they'll talk about this one first. It has Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man.
Yes.
Fighting the Doom Patrol. Yeah, and that one's done by Tom Fowler with Tamara Bonvillain. And it's beautiful. I love it.
It's awesome. Awesome.
Mm. Yeah. But the main cover is one that it shows like a TV test pattern with a wedding cake with the disappointment with the blank outline inside and a character getting married, on the, it looks like. And I just want to point out, this is the original cover for issue 12. The original issue 11 cover had sort of Terry Nunn doing jazz hands, if you remember.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And that cover's gone now, because I think they smooshed issue 11 and 12 into one issue here.
Which
is probably reflected in the 26 pages of story, which is sort of a bit above average for a comic, so well done there, DC. Anyway, we probably need a recap, because this is it's been a while. So, previously in the Doom Patrol, after the miracle food shit took the world by storm, it was revealed that long-term foe-slash-nuisance to the patrol, Mr. Nobody, was behind it all. With his newly formed Brotherhood of Nada, made up of the Brutalist, 50% Chad, Hector the Boy Detector, and the Breeze, he activated the power of shit to generally make everything insane. Lucius, the teenage son of Sam and Valerie Reynolds, Sam is the EMT who works with Casey, wanted no part of this because he was sort of joining the Brotherhood at this point and left with his family to become the Harry Potter of some hell dimension. Weird. Speaking of weird, Ricardo, Fug and Casey helped Mr. Nobody's daughter, Terry Nunn, give birth to Casey's love child. this was detected by Retcon, who the company who work with the disappointment. And with the birthing happening in the back of Danny the Ambulance, the Brotherhood of and the Patrol in pursuit, reality was ruptured and everyone crashed into Retcon headquarters just as Retcon planned. Cue the mysterious applause from the mysterious watchers of all this. So let's get into the issue proper. So a narrator explains the concept of being entertained as a classical clown demonstrates the visuals. So we see from a single ball, which was entertaining at first, to two balls, which is more entertaining, to multiple balls being juggled, to Shakespearean theatre, to the radio and to the TV and so on and so on. And this demonstration is seen by six sort of masked figures, but not like superhero masks, but sort of complete head masked, like they've got Nerf all over their heads, sitting in a white space. Yeah, and from the wreckage of the ambulance crash, the blank outline of a baby is removed by Richard. Richard is the guy who works for Retcon, looks like a DC staffer from the 80s. And one of the other people remove a piece of gum from the sole of a boot, which happens to belong to the prone Cliff Steele. And then the now conscious team are herded away by armed guards. And Richard loads the baby into a one baby-sized rocket ship and then launches it into a glowing crystal. An angry Jane remembers her first encounter with the disappointment when she is brought before him, and that was when he used Danny the Brick to murder the god of superheroes, the results of which were seen on the final page of the first issue of this volume, and it was covered again in more detail in issue 4. So, yeah, anyway, Jane asks who he is, and he dramatically and sort of poetically explains, "I am what comes at the end. I am the disappointment. I am wreck and I am ruin. I am so much nothing. I am everything. I am burst and bloated dreams, and I am a mountain of unforgivable things. When Jane threatens him, he touches her forehead and causes her to collapse, with her consciousness tossed back into her inner network of multiple personalities, which we've seen depicted as a railway underground network. Mm-hmm. The disappointment continues, expositing how he was once a heroic toy called Haxalon, created to provide a solution to a company's surplus of green light bulbs. A hit as a toy and as a comic, it all ended when the children were struck catatonic by his green chest light. Litigation destroyed all companies involved, and Haxalon was consigned to IP oblivion. Cancelled and forgotten, he gained the ability to move outside of reality and found a place called Final Heaven, where resides the hacky corporation Bretcon, with the ability to access all realities and basically create new rip-off realities based on other realities. They don't create anything new. It's always based on something else. Mm. He also found the God of Superheroes, of whom he was supremely jealous. So that's the superhero guy who's just been showing up in the Justice League of America comic as well, recently. Mm-hmm. I'm confused. Anyway, scouring the infinite comic libraries of Retcon, the disappointment finally read about the God's only vulnerability, which was to a brick that can think. After seeming eons, he found Jane and Danny the Brick and lured them in to kill the God of Superheroes. So he killed the God of Superheroes, not them. Well, Danny the Brick was involved directly.
Yeah.
Not willfully.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, after this, Richard is explained to Cliff that he's not the real Cliff, but he's a fan fiction, often written in romantic entanglements with tragic Jane, the only human who can understand his pain. Cliff asks how he came to be fighting fly-worshipping shock troopers inside a Euro, and this was Retcon's doing, as a lamb had eaten a tiny piece of a crystal of one of their hyper-reality shards, and Cliff asks what the flies represent, and they explain that the flies represent eyes or an artist's anxieties. And Cliff asks, what's the purpose of Retcon? And the disappointment tells him its purpose is to entertain the faceless gods, the Anonymous, whose sole purpose is to destroy the universe, but they can be distracted by constant entertainment broadcast to them via television. Right.
Yes, of course.
Okay. As they confuse the hell out of Cliff and the readers, the piece of gum from Cliff's boot is placed on the ground and bathed in energy, growing into a humanoid shape. It floats upright, grows elaborate headwear and robes. The disappointment announces his plan to cut the broadcast to the eons, that's what he calls the Anonymous, who will then destroy everything once they are no longer distracted. But this will be done after his wedding to his bride Starlene, who will be played by the revived Rita Farr, who was found on Cliff's boot. Retcon employees are understandably concerned about the end of everything, and one called Charles is working on a backup plan in a room with the Brotherhood of Nada. He makes his pitch to Mr. Nobody, you could be the star of an infinite show to entertain the Anonymous forever. And Mr. Nobody thinks, with the ability to make anything up, I could really subvert television programming like I've always wanted to, while at the same time living in an empty white room drinking free Diet Cola. We're in! The rest of the Brotherhood of Nada think that this idea sucks, and they leave immediately. But Mr. Nobody stops Terry. He explains to her, you had a baby who doesn't exist. It'll fade into nothing, and I wanted to rebuild the world with our brush in all its insanity, start over, not destroy everything. That's some supervillain hokum, and I have evolved past that. This is right where I need to be in my career right now. And she says, well, you can do it yourself, because I'm not coming with you. He says, I'm sorry, Terry, but I made you up. You don't exist without me. That means where I go, you go. Back at the wedding, the ceremony reaches its climax as the disappointment kisses the bride. He steps back, expecting the broadcast to be cut at this point, but nothing happens. Suddenly, shock troops burst into the room, spraying bullets. And I just want to point out, these are the same shock troops who were inside the Euro in issue one.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. Cliff shields the team from all these bullets that are bouncing around, but the disappointment, he produces a revolver, and apologizes to Rita as he shoots her in the stomach. The bullet distorts her body as it stretches into her guts before being flung back at deadly force into the disappointment. The patrol are suddenly blasted unconscious by bovine soldiers, or cows, as most people know, who have arrived as retcon reinforcements. Richard orders them to grab Rita and load her into a new reality. While all this is taking place, Jane is in her internal rail network, and she arrives at a beautiful garden station where a child is painting a picture. As she approaches, she turns to see dozens of Janes behind her who tell her it's okay to be her, to be us, it's okay to be human, to help. Long before the gene bomb, they say, she was a healer. She awakens in retcon and staggers towards the dying disappointment, who is still trying to cut the transmission to the Anonymous. She touches his forehead. I can't save your life, but I can fix your heart. He lies on the floor in her arms. The white copyright withheld void of his body turns back into the regular form of Haxalon, and he dies experiencing peace, which he hasn't felt in a long, long time. The Anonymous, applaud this ending. It's very entertaining. Then the channel changes, and Mr. Nobody welcomes them to Nobody TV.
Oh, God.
Jane leads the patrol out of the retcon hall. If they get to Danny, they can go after Rita as well and track down Casey's baby. They are suddenly stopped by the cow soldiers pointing weapons at them. Before they can attack, the cow troops are blasted by mystical energy. Lucius Reynolds appears, floats before them in a hooded robe, and he is flanked by his mother and his father, dressed in sort of warrior garb, like they've been on the set of Xena.
Yeah.
They have popped away from their adventures in the Daemonscape to help them. And Lucius tells them, I have brought you all the time I can, but now we must return. Expect us when the seven suns gleam proudly on Umla, but you are on your own for now. Okay.
Right.
Flex rights the Dambulance, which is on its side after crashing, and Casey dresses in her reality driving gear. A trapped and terrified Terry Nunn appears on the television briefly behind her. The team all pop back into Dannyland, where Lotion the Cat is making himself quite at home by being the King of the Bees ride. And Casey asks Fug if he's ready, and with his thumbs up, she zooms Danny into the reality shard that floats above a milk carton to be continued in Milk Wars.
Whew.
I'd like to thank them for the hardest synopsis I've had to write in the history of this show.
You did very well, my friend. You did very well. Because this issue is a little bit batshit crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it shows that it was meant to be two issues originally.
Yeah.
There's a bit of compression going here. I mean, they got extra story pages, but there's a hell of a lot going on, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, do you think we're the Anonymous? Are we the faceless watchers of these realities who can cause them to be cancelled if we lose interest?
That is a very interesting take that I had not even thought of, but I can see it, yes. I could agree that we are the Anonymous. Or, you know, that lot, yeah.
Anonymous.
Yes. We're there, yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept that these people are all, you know, they're all doing these dramas to entertain us, and if we're not entertained, that means the end of their existence.
Mm. Yes. I was glad to see some more backstory into the death of the God of Heroes, finally. Although, I'm confused because I thought you were saying in JLA, in its recent issues, that it was a different villain that had killed the God.
Yeah, it's Kronos in that. I mean, it's like exactly the same events with the same reason. Like, Kronos discovers that the God of Heroes, superheroes, can be killed with a brick that can think.
Wow, okay.
And he goes and finds Danny and uses it. So I'm just wondering if that's a different play out of the same event in a different reality, and it's maybe it's the mainstream DC Universe reality. Maybe, I'm confused. But I don't know. But, I mean, yeah. It's definitely the same, you know, outcome with the same method with a different villain. So,
how bizarre.
Yeah, but, I mean, it sort of states in this comic that The Doom Patrol comic we've been reading has been taking place in a retcon reality, not in the mainstream DC universe. So maybe that's the reason, but I'm confused.
See, that's the thing, because, yeah, now I'm going to have to go back and really read everything really carefully to try and figure out where everything is actually set and what's going on. Because one thing that kind of irked me is this whole concept that Cliff isn't Cliff, he's just fan fiction come to life.
Yeah, well, they literally say Cliff is, the real Cliff is having proper adventures somewhere else.
Yeah.
And this is a fan fiction Cliff who's much more, you know, romantically entangled with Jane or, you know, in some sort of unrequited way on both their parts, perhaps. But, yeah, but he's not the real Cliff and he's the, which, I mean, we know what happens in Milk Wars and how Milk Wars ends. So, you know, is that, sort of, is the real Cliff kind of been supplanted by this Cliff in the DC universe after Milk Wars? I mean, is that the big change that's going to happen in 12 and 13? Are we, you know, are they fully integrated into the regular continuity of things now?
Don't forget Cliff Steel. Is Cliff Steel the human flesh and being the fleshy? Oh, I can't even talk properly.
He's a
Cliff
person.
Steel's human again, yeah.
Yeah, he's a man who is a man.
He's a man who is a man, yeah, again. And so, yeah, it's all... Yes, Doom Patrol's weird at the best times, but this has got me really scratching my head as to how it's all going to play out. I kind of hope they have been moved... Okay, if issue 1 to 11 so far is in the retcon universe, and after Milk Wars they're now in DCU proper, I'm cool with that, but it's a very confusing ride.
Yeah.
As to how we got there.
Yeah, well, I must admit, I was sitting down this morning and I finished writing my synopsis and I thought, well, hang on, why don't I just pull the trade off the shelf for the first six issues and give it a reread? Mm-hmm. And I didn't reread it completely, but I sort of, you know, skimmed it. But it just struck me how much reality bending has gone on in this comic from the very get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Casey's whole existence being, you know, created by Danny and...
Yes.
Yeah, her whole backstory is all artificial and, you know, and Terry's artificial and, you know, everything is artificial. It's like it's all fiction, isn't it?
yes. Have to say... I'm a little disappointed that the Brotherhood of Nada have pretty much just gone. They've just wandered off. Yeah.
It's like, well, I'd love to see them show up in other comics. You know, the way Mellor and the Brain have a life outside of the Doom Patrol, it'd be good to see, you know, Hector the Boy Detector and 50% Chad.
And the Brutalist.
And the Brutalist.
I love the fact that it's Brutalist Architecture walking around and fighting.
So, yeah.
But that's the thing, Mellor and the Brain have had plenty of time to build up their fan base, whereas these guys have only been in a couple of issues.
Yeah. It might be left to Steve Orlando to start using them.
Yeah. But, yeah, I am going to have to do a read-through of the entire series again, just to still... I mean, I enjoyed it, but there are still bits that have me scratching my head as to... What exactly has happened. And I think you're right. I think they have condensed two issues into one here just to try and get caught up again.
Yeah.
So, but on that, I did enjoy it. It was a nice bit of closure for the most part. And as always, the art is fantastic. You cannot fault the art team at all. It's just the writing's got me a little bit stumped.
Well, I mean, one thing I noticed is when Jane is brought before the disappointment, there's that sort of the captions of the, you know, the weird captions of, you know, the man on the boat, you know, on the shore. And
yeah.
Yeah, they are the same ones that are in the first issue.
Really?
And okay. They are, you know, in the last couple of pages of the comic. So, there's some deliberate stuff going on here. But, I mean, it really does feel like an ending for the team at this point. It, you know, it feels like at the conclusion of something because, you know, the way Casey narrates as she, you know, prepares to fly off to Milk Wars. It's very much like, you know, there's closure in what she's saying.
Those last few captions from Casey, yeah, on that last page, that to me was almost, I almost wondered if it was Gerard's way of saying goodbye.
Gerard's way.
You know what I mean. I wonder if there's, you know, he's put a bit of himself in those final comments from Casey.
Yeah, I mean, this is a comic that honestly it makes me feel like, am I bright enough to read it sometimes?
Yeah, Doom Patrol will do that to you.
Yeah. The things that stood out to me, I love the idea that the Reynolds family all went off and became, you know, sort of badasses in this other dimension.
We have to see that adventure. We have to see the Reynolds family in the Daemon's Cave, you know?
Yeah.
They've come back as like barbarian warriors or something, you know?
Yeah, and Sam's got really long hair and he's got this massive belt and carrying a big sword and he's got the wrist braces sort of thing. And Valerie, you know, she looked like a frumpy housewife before, but now she looks like...
Something from Xena.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was awesome.
It's very cool. And, you know, the fact that they're going off to continue their adventures. And, you know, there was the promise from Gerard that there'd be more about them coming up. Mm. I'm really sad about the outcome with Terry. Terry Nunn, you know, one of my favorite characters in this run. And she's basically trapped at the behest of Mr. Nobody, who, you know, he may be her creator, but he's not treating her like a father.
That shot of her trapped in the TV, that was a bit sad. But time for a reread, I think, gang. And then a reread of Milk Wars, and then maybe something will start to make sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Milk Wars trade will be out before the second volume of Doom Patrol. So when I've got all three, I'm going to go through them all in one go, and I'm sure it will continue to reward me because it is very dense. There's a lot of moving pieces, and it's you know, it's like the guy juggling all the balls at the start.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
But I like that too, saying that, you know, to entertain people, you have to keep making it more, you know, flashier and more complex.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the implied statement from the, you know, once a ball was entertaining, and then, you know, it's like what a child finds entertaining with what an adult finds entertaining. So, it's all very deep.
Yes.
So,
I just to keep things a bit kinky, one of my favourite panels is when Casey is arguing with the disappointment and he shoots back at her with, "Didn't you have sex with your cat? Yeah, I don't think we need to hear any more out of you."
She has a good comeback.
Yeah, he's a man cat with his own free will and I can get down with whoever wants to get down. Like, yeah, you tell him, girlfriend. Yeah, so I guess, yeah, overall, I've enjoyed this issue, but it definitely needs a reread, and I feel bad for anyone who's coming in late and has not read the preceding issues, because, oy, they're in for a headache.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll be interesting to see what's ahead for us in Volume 6. I'm very curious now. I don't know where it's going to go.
No.
Genuinely.
Yeah, I am keen to see more from this team and this volume. So, fingers crossed, something comes out soon.
Yeah, cool. Doomsplained.
Doomsplained, darn. And now it's time for the Mailbag O'Doom. And last time on the show, we asked you, what's your number one goal at a comic convention? I wonder why that one came up. And first off, on the Twitters, we heard from Ange at Dr. Ange 70, and he said, if it's a goal, commission sketches. If it's a dream goal, run a panel.
We heard from Ryan Daly. He said, don't get arrested unless it's for fighting with Roy Thomas, which is a joke related to his Secret Origins podcast, because he was pretty harsh on Roy.
Right. Bud A at Arbud F09 said, finding the one issue missing in the collection, there is always one, for an affordable price, but The best memories are actually shaking hands and saying thank you to the writers and artists who created the comics I love.
We heard from At Fractures, who's fractastic, and he said, meeting up with my comic buds in the flesh rather than digitally on the Twitter's Facebook, and anything else is a bonus.
Nice, nice. And then Jack Rocha, because we know how to pronounce it now. Thank you to the message that Jack sent to Wilfred. Jack said, for me, panels. I just went to C2E2 and caught the three main DC panels. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just sent Jack a postcard for Waiting for Doom, so he should have that shortly.
The system works.
Yes. We heard from Carl Bakey at C Bakeware, and he said, I've only been reading comics for 2 years, and I have yet to make it to a con. Goal one, go to my first Comic Con. Goal two, fanboy all over Nick Darrington and get him to draw Cliff and Jane on a short box for me.
Ooh, nice.
On a short box.
That's cool.
Yeah, cool.
And welcome to Comicton, Carl, you know?
Yeah.
Don't ever, I hate when people say, oh, I've only been reading for a little while. It doesn't matter, dude. Or dude.
Yeah.
If you're enjoying them, enjoy them. More power to you. Comics are for everyone. Comics
they are awesome.
Martin Gray at Mark Gray said his main goal is to meet all my podcasting and blogging pals. Nice.
We heard from Sean, who's at Secret Wars and Beyond podcast, and he does the Welcome to Astrocity, I think it's pronounced, podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Busiek's Astrocity.
Oh, right. Astrocity, you know, maybe?
No, I think it's Astrocity. Anyway, Astrocity. He said, not breathing the air.
Right. So I guess, depending on how...
Cons can be toxic, can they?
Yeah. Bob Gar on Ellis at Slurmo said his main goal is selling his comics and artwork. Hashtag pure greed. My fun comes after the cons with food, drink, and friends. And more drink. Fair enough.
Take a drink. we heard from one Shag Matthews on the Facebooks, and he said, my personal goal at conventions is to meet other folk from our community of podcast friends. I hear other folks' goal is to meet Shag Matthews. I hear that guy is dreamy. Oh, Wilfred, what do you think of Shag?
He's hot.
Right. Okay, that wasn't weird at all. Clinton Robson said, honestly, just have fun and see people I never get to see outside in the real world. Other than that, grab any awesome signatures I can. Cool.
We heard from Derek William Crabb, who's from the Fanholes podcast, I believe. And he said, depends on the time and the con. In my youth, it was seeing and getting vintage superpower toys. Eventually, it was to seek out key back issues, first appearances, etc., and to ask questions at panels. Then it was to get hordes of comics at 10 and 25 cent prices. Lately, I've been getting autographs on posters, promos, and prints, slowly getting into commissions. Wow. Covering all the bases there, Derek.
Yeah. Well done. Tom Panarese said, it depends on the show and who the guests are. Sometimes I'm really excited to meet a certain creator, while other times I'm eager to do some bin diving or check out cheap trades. Cool.
Hmm. Jared Driscoll said, I haven't been to a con in over 20 years, but when I did, I would try to find cheap back issues to fill the holes in my collection.
Okay.
Good one.
Tim McEwen said, getting all the new great Australian comics. Okay, I like it. Supporting local talent. Very cool.
Tim would know. We heard from Gord Tolton, who said, to score on a rebound into an empty net. What?
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Follow your dreams, Gord. I'm living proof. Max Trevor said, getting sketches from my favorite artists. Nice.
Yeah. Mike Peacock said, cheap books, treasuries, T-shirts, and if she's with me, ensuring my wife doesn't punch someone.
Right. Edwin Latore said, my goal is usually to rush from panel to panel and shopping for stuff. Okay.
David Ennis said his number one goal at a con is staying alive.
Right.
Right. Are they that dangerous?
What sort of cons are you going to, David? Wow. And finally, we heard from Andrew Watton Davies, who said, mostly sell as many badges as possible from his Etsy shop called Needlessly Aggressive. for a shameless plug, followed by tracking down missing Doom Patrol singles and merchandise.
Nice. He had some cool badges, didn't he?
I have to follow up with Andrew because he has one badge that reads Podcast Wanker, which really made me laugh.
Yes, I showed my wife that.
Yes, I found it very appealing. Anyway, Paul, what's your number one goal at a con?
Well, I'm about to go to Heroes Con in Carolina, and my number one goal is probably to meet the community over there. So nice. I'm very excited because we've had several guests of the show who's going to be there. So Chris Sabella's going to be there, mm-hmm. and Richard Case.
Yep.
And there was someone else, wasn't there?
Tamara?
Tamara's going to be there, yeah. So meeting them, but also podcasting people like the Sutherlands and Jared Albrecht and people like that, Pat Sampson.
Awesome.
And, Professor Allen and Emily. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to meeting those people and disappointing them in person.
Right. It's good to have a goal.
It is. What about you, Mike?
So, mine would be hanging with friends at a convention and not making an idiot of myself in front of credit. My two things, hanging with friends, not making an idiot of myself in front of creators. Hello, Mike Grell, if you're listening. And then meeting three. No, I'll start again. The main one will be hanging with friends. It's just so much fun to hang out with your buddies at a convention and just, you know, go up and have a chinwag with creators or go, you know, dive for back issues or sit in on a panel together. It's just so much fun to do it with like-minded individuals. You know, so lots of fun. So,
yeah.
Cool.
Well, I think that's it for our show at this point. So, yeah, we better wrap things up. What are we doing next week, Mike?
Next week on the feed, we have episode 8 of DC OCD, where we will be looking at Eclipso.
Eclipso, the darkness within.
Spooky. Then the week after that, episode 123 of Waiting for Doom, with more volume 4 hotness. Volume 9 and 10 of Volume 4 from John Byrne.
Oh, that's the halfway point, so we've got to get through that to get to the end. Yeah.
And do we have another question of the week for the next Waiting for Doom, Paul?
Yes. So this is one for the art appreciators amongst you. Who's your favourite panel-to-panel visual storyteller in comics? So not your favourite artist, but who's the best storyteller? Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us and answer that question, there's Twitter at WFDpod. There's email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page on Facebook at Facebook. And there's mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is Doug's awesome site. And that's it for this week, I think.
It is. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.